Good morning. To very briefly summarize what we learned last week. Last week we discovered that there are a number of cases in Ribbis where there's a transaction that does not seem to be a loan at all, and nevertheless, it is subject to Hilchos Ribbis. The first case that we had was the case of a rental. If a person leases a property, leases a car, if he takes on full responsibility for the item, Geneva Avedo, Einsin, Yoker Vizol, he has all the liability, although it's a rental, he's paying, he's using the goods, since he has complete responsibility for the item, for its value, in Halacha we will look at it as a halva, and it will be aser. Now, the Halacha will depend very much on what the terms of the deal are. Every soicher, every time you rent a car, every time you rent anything in halacha, you're responsible for geneva v'aveda. You're responsible if it gets stolen or if it gets lost. If you want to take extra responsibility, you want to say even if there was an oinus, even if there were something that could not have been prevented, you're liable. You can do that as well, provided that the normal wear and tear, and or if there's a change in value, that is not the renter's responsibility. And in most cases, when you rent a car, even if you're responsible for Einzin, if there's wear and tear, that's not your problem. And certainly, if the value of the car drops, that's not your problem either. So in most cases, leases are not a problem. Where it becomes more of a shayla is in a triple net lease, where you're taking full responsibility for Gneva Aveda, for Einzin, for all maintenance. There, as well, it's usually mutter, because typically, even in a triple net lease, the normal wear and tear, the fact that the item aged and it was used, that normally is not your responsibility, and therefore it's typically would be mutter. There was a case we actually dealt with last week where there was a person who rented a car. It was in Canada. The leases work a bit differently there. It was a used car. And besides for the fact that he was responsible to pay the lease, he was responsible for Gneva Avedo or Einzin, he also had to guarantee that the residual value of the car would be above a certain amount. So that way, the owner of the car, the person who was leasing it to him, was guaranteed that at the end of the lease, when the car would be returned, its value would be at least whatever the projection was, and that way, they definitely would not lose money off the deal. In such a case, The renter essentially has all the liability, Gneva Veda, Einzin, Yoker Vizol, and in such a case, that would be Ribbis, and would probably be Ribbis D'Oraisa. That's true, but in this case, although the wear and tear, he was allowed to have the normal wear and tear, he had to guarantee that the pras, or the value of the car, even after the wear and tear, would meet that threshold. So that's essentially saying that he's responsible for the wear and tear. So the threshold was it was below the value at the time of the lease, which is actually what the person's argument was why it should be mutter. But if you looked at the numbers, the way they came up with the threshold is the value of the car was, let's say, $20,000. They used an 8% imputed interest. They added up all of the payments that were being made, and the threshold was the payments, you know, not excluding the interest, the original value of the car minus the payments. Excluding the interest, that was the minimum threshold. So essentially, the owner was guaranteeing he would get paid the full value of the car plus this imputed interest. So in that case, regardless of what the threshold number was, he was guaranteeing the entire value, and that would be a problem with Ribbis, probably Ribbis D'Oraisa. Yeah, but the whole point of the threshold was to make sure that the payments plus the residual value would be at least equal to the current value of the car when they signed this deal. If the threshold would be below that, then it would be mutter. But you also have to realize at that point that the owner is exposed to a loss, because if it just drops that threshold, he's going to have a hefset. And that the whole point of this threshold was to avoid any possibility of a loss. And the next halacha that we discussed last week was we pointed out that although ribbis is usually by a halva, and many places can say if a gazlan, someone steals money, and when he comes to return what he stole, if he wants to, be Mephias, his victim, he wants to add some, pay him a few extra dollars, that typically is not a problem. Ribbis is on halva, not on gezel. Nevertheless, by a mekach tois, if you buy something and you find out later that it was a tois, the mekach is batel. There, according to many paiskim, there is an isser of ribbis. There was a nachal yitzchok that was makel when the borrower, or when the seller knew that it was defective, but even that is not so clear. But certainly, when he didn't know about it, there, the levush, the bach, and the taz, all hold there would be a problem of ribbis. Based on that, we pointed out that very often when your person is lending to a corporation and wants to be samech on the igros moisha, very often there will be a bad boy clause where if the borrower breaches certain covenants, then he's personally liable. These clauses, if they're triggered, would now be a problem. Because although perhaps it's a mekach tois, although perhaps he did shalai kedin, still the bottom line is that it will have a din of halva according to most poskim. And there's a ktsitsa here. There's an agreement that if it is breached, there's going to be an interest charge. This will be a problem. Now, it's very yitachin that if a person wants to be samech on the igros moisha, he can probably lend money if he's convinced that this clause will never be triggered. Because right now, it's non-recourse, and right now, there's no interest accruing. Now, more than that, the borrower is representing that everything that he said is true, and this clause is theoretical. He's representing that none of these things happened. So in that case, you can be samech on what he says, and you could lend him the money. It's not a problem with the ktsitsa today. However, you're taking a risk. Because in the event that it comes out that he triggers this clause, and now he's personally liable, then you would have a problem collecting the interest. So if you're the borrower and you're convinced, you know the facts, you know that all of these representations are true, then mistama, it's mutter, you can be samecha, if you're going to be samecha on the gros moisha, you'll be able to borrow the money. But if you're in a situation where this clause is triggered, you now have a problem and you would not be able to collect the interest. Yes, these clauses usually say that if any of these things are breached, then you're personally liable for the debt and for the interest. Usually environmental, if there was a material misstatements on the financials, if you declare a voluntary bankruptcy, there are different clauses that can They're not very likely, and it's more than that. You know, usually very often the borrower will know already whether or not the statements are true or not. You know, it could happen that he was also fooled, but typically it's in his control. Mikano lahabo, I think that would still be a problem. We'll get back to it. We're going to discuss a similar case with a goy during today's shiur, so perhaps we'll get back to it. But the bottom line is, I think it would be a problem in most cases.
I'm sorry, I'm going to just quickly. In a loan between two companies, you usually own them. What if the loan, the borrower, the owner of that company, is personally guaranteeing that loan?
Then in halacha, it has the din of a regular loan between two Jews, and it would be ribbis deraisa. The whole heter of the igros moisha is when the borrower has absolutely no liability. There, the igros moisha has his famous kula that it's not called a loan, and according to the igros moisha, it would be mutter. Others argue, but that's the sheet of the igros moisha. Then that means he's guaranteeing it. It just means you take it from the assets of the business first. That case is worse than what we're discussing now. That would certainly be awesome. Now today, we're going to discuss the next case of ribbis, which is not very clear at first glance. And that is ribbis involving an arev, a guarantor. There are two cases that we'll have to deal with. The first case is if a goy lends money to a yid. So a goy has a letter charge interest. No problem with ribbis. Ribbis is only between two Jews. What happens if the goy lends money to a yid, a yid lends money to a goy, but another yid guarantees the loan? So as long as the goy is the one making the goyish borrower is making the payments, everything's wonderful. The deal is between a Jew and a goy, excellent. The lender is a yid, the borrower is a goy, but a yid guarantees the debt. So as long as the goy is paying the making the payments, everything's fine. The problem is what happens if the goy defaults. At that point, the yid is going to end up stepping into the goy's shoes. He's the guarantor. He's going to have to pay. So we have a potential problem of ribbis. The reverse case is also a question, and that is, what happens if a yid borrows money from a goy? Someone goes to a bank, he borrows money. So paying interest, no problem. The goy, the bank, does not trust this borrower, and therefore he wants him to get a cosigner. He wants to get him, someone has to guarantee the loan. So can a yid guarantee a loan that another yid borrowed from a goy? Now in this case, if you think about it, if as long as the borrower is paying the interest to the goy, there's no problem. Between the goy and the yid, everything's fine. If the borrower defaults, and now the goy, the bank, goes after the cosigner, so the cosigner is definitely allowed to pay the goy. Because that's between a yid and a goy, that's not a problem. The question is, if he now turns around and asks the borrower, who's also Jewish, to reimburse him for the interest that he paid, here the question is, do we run into a ribbis problem? Because the cosigner has paid out ribbis to a guy, and now he's passing along that interest expense. So this is where the shaila begins. Now, to understand the halacha, we need a very brief introduction or background in the halachos of an arev. In halacha, there are three types of guarantors. When a person borrows money, and he doesn't trust the he says, I want an arev. I want someone to guarantee the debt. So the halacha is, if someone comes along and says, I am an arev, I am guaranteeing the debt, go lend him the money, don't worry about it. The halacha is that you can only go after the guarantor after you try to collect from the borrower. First, you have to sue the borrower. You have to take away whatever assets he has. If he has nothing left, at that point, the guarantee gets triggered. At that point, you can go after the guarantor. Until then, you have absolutely no claim against the guarantor. This is called an arev stam. Now, in Hilchos Ribbis, when you're dealing with an arev stam, when you're dealing with an arev, where a guarantor, where his liability is secondary, you first have to go after the borrower. Here, you do not have a ribbis problem. Because in both cases, if the yid lends money to a guy, the debt is between the guy and the yid. If and when the guy defaults, at that point, the guarantor is going to have to step into his shoes and pay the keren, the ribbis, whatever it is. But he's paying the guy's obligation. V'haraya, until there was a default, until you sued the borrower sued the guy and tried to collect, you had no claim against the guarantor. So in that case, even though at the end of the day the Jewish guarantor is paying the Jewish lender, since his liability kicks in only after the default, we look at it as if he's simply paying the goy's obligation, and there is no problem with ribbis.
Why is it then, in my case, the two companies, and then the Jewish guarantor of one of the Jewish loans?
Because if you own a company, then you're not just guaranteeing it; then you're really the principal. That's different than when you're guaranteeing for a third party. So that's halacha by an arev stam. If you're a guarantor, but your liability is secondary, the lender first has to go after the borrower. Then, in all these cases, it's mutter. The opposite extreme is an arev shloiftutz, which is something which is not really in halacha. It's how the goyim used to operate. They used to have this concept that the lender had to go after the guarantor first. He had to go after the guarantor first. He couldn't go after the borrower. He'd go straight after the guarantor. In that case, again, it's an unusual case. I've never seen it today. But in that case, the guarantor is essentially considered the borrower. So if a Yiddish lender is lending to a guy, but a Jew is acting as his Arv Shleif Dutz, we look at it as a transaction between two Jews, and that would clearly be Aser Lekulei Am. because even though the cash is going to the guy who borrowed, since this yid signed up as an Arv Shleif Dutz, he has the primary liability. He's the one that has to pay it back, and therefore he is considered like the borrower. Correct. Even though he never got the money, but since he has the liability to pay, and the lender has to come to him, he can't even go after the borrower. In such a case, that would certainly be awesome. Because the Hamtanas Mois, if I tell you give money to him and but I'm going to take full responsibility for both the Karen and the Ribbis, that is Hamtanas Mois. And that's an extreme case. That's something which I've never actually seen today. The middle case, which is the most common type of arvus, is something called an Ariv Kablin. An Ariv Kablin is Ratzmi Zegoiva Ratzmi Zegoiva. You lend money to the borrower, but the lender wants to be protected. If the borrower starts draining him and not paying, he doesn't want to have to go bring the borrower to Beis Din, sue him, and kick him out of his house. He wants it to be that if the borrower defaults or whenever, he can go after whoever he wants. In theory, he can go right after the Kablin, right, the guarantor right away. He has no responsibility to go after the borrower first. He can choose who to go after. This is known as an Ariv Kablin. Today, virtually all guarantees that people sign are like this, unless it's in a commercial setting, but usually the lender wants to have the option to go after whoever they choose. So usually there's joint and several liability. The lender can go after who he wants. This is known as an Ariv Kablin. And this is a machloikus, what the halacha is when it comes to ribbis.
Is that mostly
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have, if you're an Ariv Stam, means you have to go after the borrower first. It's a whole headache. Because you have to go after him, you have to bring him to Beis Din, you have to try to collect. The lenders are not interested. They want to be able to go after whoever is the easiest target.
None of them make a clause that will first at least make an attempt.
Very often they don't. Even if they do, if they just have to send a letter or just ask for the money, they don't have to bring him to Beis Din, then it probably still would have a din of Ariv Kaplan. But you see, the Shlomo Zalman Orbach passing like that, it's Meduyik in the Shulchan Aruch Rav. But see, who does Meduyik from Minchas Halos, so that maybe as long as you have to try first, maybe that's enough to be an Ariv Stam. But the halacha would seem that you have a din of an Ariv Kaplan. Now, in these cases, where you're an Ariv Kaplan, here, the Rajba is Mekel. The Rajba says that since you're not the borrower, since you're only a guarantor, there's no problem with Ribbis. However, the Rashi and Howie Paskin and Shulchan Aruch both say that by an Ariv Kablin, you have a problem. And if a Yiddish lender lends money to a Goy, and a Jew signs as an Ariv Kablin, we look at it as if, since it's a Ratzmi Zegoy, you can collect from whoever you want. We look at it as if all the interest that accrued on the guarantor. And if the guarantor pays the interest, you have a direct problem with ribbis. In the flip case as well, if a yid borrows money from a goyish bank, and someone signs as an Ariv Kaplan, someone co-signs on the loan, there, according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to Rashi, this would be a problem. Now, this is extremely common, especially today, where it's harder and harder to qualify for a mortgage. Very often banks will not lend to someone directly. They'll want someone who's older, who has more of an established credit history, to guarantee the loan, to sign for them. According to Shulchan Aruch, according to Rashi, this is an Ariv Kaplan, and this would have a problem of ribbis. And whenever a person needs a co-signer, you have to realize this is according to the Shulchan Aruch Pasans, this is us, and you'll have to deal with it. That's true. If the bank agrees to accept that you'll only guarantee the principal, not the interest, that certainly would be better. But usually that's not the case. Usually, while you're right, when push comes to shove, they may settle. But on the documents, they want a full-blown guarantee. And since it's a full-blown guarantee, you have an order of cobbling on a loan between a yid and a goy, and that's a problem. Very good. Very good. By an Ariv Kablin, as long as the bank lends money, you have one yid borrowing, you have another yid who's co-signing. If the borrower makes all the payments for the next 30 years, then no interest ever changed hands. He borrowed from the bank, he's paying back the principal, he's paying back the interest. The problem is only triggered if the borrower defaults, the guarantor makes the payments, and then he turns around to the borrower and says, pay me back for the interest that I paid the bank. Reimbursing him for that interest is a problem, because we look at him, because he's a kavlan, it's like he borrowed the money from the bank and lent it to you. That interest is a problem. However, in a case where you're convinced the borrower is good for the money, he'll never default, and you want to make up that even if he defaults and the guarantor ends up paying, he will not ask for the interest back, that would be fine. You're allowed to ask for your principal, you're not allowed to ask for your interest back.
As far as the guarantor is concerned, he lent him the interest, so he's not
rigorous.
He's going back.
So that's the point. Bayin Arif Stam, if the guarantor's obligation is only kicks in after a default, then we look at it, whatever he pays the bank, at that moment he's lending it to the borrower. Whether it's principal interest, it makes no difference, and he can get reimbursed for the entire amount. That's by an Arif Stam. By an Arif Kamblin, from day one, really both, there were two obligations. The borrower owed money to the bank, the Kamblin, the guarantor, owed the money to the bank. From day one, interest accrued on both of these debts. So if the guarantor pays, we look at it as if he paid his principal and interest that he owed, and now he's turning around and in the same way he owed to the bank, the borrower owed it to him, and we look at it as if it accrued between the two of them. It depends when the obligation gets triggered. Yeah, in Arif Stam, once there's a default, if he pays the bank, and the bank, in Akhanami, once there's a, if he pays the bank, and now he... So in that case, in all likelihood, each month is a new default. Each month is a new trigger. There's, you know, the borrower didn't pay, so in that case, I think it would be fine. On the other hand, if the Arif Stam pays off the bank, and now he wants to accrue interest to the borrower, that would be awesome. But if each month there's another payment, and each month the borrower defaults, the Arif Stam has to make a payment. He can go after the borrower for the entire amount. It's by a kavlan we look at it. When the kavlan ends up paying, we look at it as if day one, he is the one that had the deal with the bank, and he took over the bank's position to go after the borrower. And that we look at it as if the interest accrued between the two Jews.
If he tells the guy, you know, you pay the bank back, and I'll get the money back from the bank.
If who tells who? Well, then, if the borrower makes all the payments, we don't have a problem. The problem is once the guarantor makes the payments, then it's as if from day one he took over the bank's position. When he asks to be reimbursed for the interest, you have a problem. No, you whatever you pay, you already paid the bank. Now you're asking him to pay it to you.
What?
The bank already got their money. No, so it's like this. That's not going to work. Yeah, if one person borrows money from the bank, and someone else, and then he takes that money, gives it to someone else, and that person makes the payments, that is ribas d'oraisa l'kulam, because there are two loans going on. You borrowed from the bank, that's fine, but you took the money, you gave it to your friend. That means you lend him the principal. In exchange for that principal, he's paying you back the principal plus your interest expense. That would certainly be ribas d'oraisa. Here, the reason why it may not be d'oraisa is it's not a real loan. It's a kablanos. It's a guarantee. But if it's two separate transactions, that would clearly be ribas. By an order of Koblin? An order of Koblin. So if he goes to his son and asks to be reimbursed for the ribbis, that would be usur. Because whatever he paid, it's as if from day one of Lamafreya, he was the Leiva and Malva, asking for that interest would be usur. If he only asked for the principal, then it would be mutter, because him paying the bank is not a problem. And
it goes on for 3 months, and then his son starts making the payments again.
Right.
Those
The interest for those three, exactly. So when you're dealing with relatives, if they don't want to write ahead to Riska and they want to make up that if the guarantor makes payments, he will not ask back for his interest, that would be fine. There was such a shita. There was an Igros Moshe and an Avdei Nezer that had a similar shita. It wasn't a machlokes, but that's not really going to help you. That was when you borrowed shloi kedin. You paid ribis, so that payment had a din of principal. Over here, the loan itself was no problem. You borrowed from a goyish bank, so you're going to follow the amortization schedule. It just has to do with the deal between the Ariv and the Loiva, so that cheshbon is not going to help you. He guaranteed everything, and the guarantor is liable for everything.
And he only laid out 3 months worth, whatever it is, let's say $3,000 altogether.
I hear the cheshbon, but it's not going to work in this case. Yeah, again, the Rav Moshe itself is a chiddush. In that case, it's not going to help you in the case of kabbalas.
And if originally when the bank instructed him, he said, "Look, he states that I'm going to be borrowed, but if the other guy gets the money, he'll pay it back to you, and then you reimburse me, and still have to pay."
Okay. It's not, practically speaking, the banks don't do that. So, you know, if you have a specific case, we'll deal with what the structure is. But under normal circumstances, when you're guaranteeing a loan, when you have an Ariv Koblin, you have a problem, and you have to either write ahead to Rivka or make some sort of deal where, if there's a default, you will not be able to get reimbursed for the interest. Yes, you could do that. That is a very nice aid. So if you have a guarantee, if you have this situation, and there's a default. So if the guarantor pays the bank, so then it's like he is the loiva and malva, and when he turns around and asks to be reimbursed for the interest, you have a problem. On the other hand, if the borrower comes and says, "Listen, I know I'm going to default, and I know we're going to have a problem. So lend me $3,000 when I need to make my payment, and that way I won't default." So there's no problem with that. You're borrowing $3,000, you're paying back $3,000. The fact the borrower is using it to pay his debt that he owes the bank that you're an Ariv on is not relevant. So that certainly would be a good eitza if you have a guarantee and you're worried and you want to protect everyone, that certainly would help. Now, you just have to realize, if you're going into the deal, you realize you're at the borrower's mercy. Because if he wants to be nice, he'll go over to you and say, "I'm going to default, lend me the money so we can avoid the problem." On the other hand, if he's not so nice and he defaults, then you'll end up paying the Karen Berebis, and he won't be allowed to reimburse you. So certainly, if you're in the situation, the borrower wants to avoid the problem, that would be a very good eitza to borrow from the guarantor. But to rely on it l'chadchilo, you have to realize that you're at the borrower's mercy.
What's the good thing? It has to go from him between these two parties, as opposed from the order to the bank.
So normally you don't need the money to actually change hands. Normally there's a concept of arvos. I can tell you, go send the money into the bank, and bahi hano, or by arvos, evikanani, I'll be responsible for it. Over here, I would advise you to actually lend him the money, because for technical reasons, usually the arvos is because you spent money on my say-so. Over here, you spent the money because you are an arif. You're liable anyway. So if you're using the lumdus of arvos to create a chiyuv, you might run into a problem. So just for eitza toiva, I would say hand the borrower the money and let him make the payment. It's really a lot easier lahalacha that way.
So that is why he's not nice. So once you get the letter in the mail from the bank, just call up the borrower and say, "Listen, I understand things are tough. You're not paying rent. Here's the money, go pay the bank."
Okay, good. And if he accepts it, then good. But if he knows, if he was at the shir, he knows if he accepts it, then he has to pay you the money back. If he says no, then he'll only have to pay you back the principal. So, okay, that's another whole set of issues. We can't deal with that right now. So just to go back, whenever you have a guarantor or a cosigner, you have to be. This is this halacha that many people overlook. You'll either need a heteriska, or the guarantor has to be prepared to eat the interest expense. Now today, besides being a guarantor, today usually the banks ask, have both parties sign as co-borrowers. That it's not like one borrows and one is a guarantor. In a residential mortgage, typically the person who is quote-unquote guaranteeing the loan signs as a borrower. Here, certainly, they should write a hetziriska. Here, it may even be a straight-out ribus d'oraisa. It might not be a question of arvus. Because over here, according to the documents, they're each borrowing the money collectively. So here, certainly, you should write a hetziriska to avoid any shilas. Excuse me? Well, they're both borrowing it, but then I'm giving all the money to him, who's to the person who's using it to buy the house. So even if we're both from the guy borrowing half of it, if you will, my share I'm giving to him to buy a house, so he owes that money back to me. So the principle you can always get. The problem is that if in halacha we look at it as if we each borrowed half, then forget about it. Arvus, every payment that's made, he's making my interest payments, and that's why you should write a hetziriska. Good, so that in halacha, there's a machlokes tzeis and nesivos exactly how to look at shnayim shalava when you have a shutvas. So you should write a hetziriska so as not to get into tzeis and nesivos and what the lumdus of shutvim shalava is. You know, the bottom line is, even when if they lent both of you 100%, you know, they're not owed $200,000. There's $100,000 that each of you owes. So the question is, in halacha, how do you deal with that? You're the one, sure. It's certainly joint, and even in halacha, you always have the right, even when shnayim shalavu, in lamdas we can clear whether each is responsible for the whole or each half. But even if they're responsible for half, they're arevim kablonim on the other half. So the bottom line result, everyone agrees and go after either for the entire amount. Question is, how do we interpret that in halacha? Is it half with an arvus, or is it different? Now, one last halacha, which the Taz brings down in Sif Gimel, which is also a very common problem that people run into, and that is very often you'll have two partners. You'll have one maybe a silent partner, the other one's is managing the property, and the property needs money. He'll go ahead, he'll take out a loan, but the bank or the guy wants a personal guarantee. So the managing partner will very often sign a personal guarantee on the loan that's going to this LLC. Now, in such a case, essentially the loan is to all the partners. They're the ones that benefit from the loan. This is their property. It's being used on their behalf. The manager is signing a personal acquiescence. He's guaranteeing the entire loan. So this is the same question. The manager is being a kablan. He's guaranteeing the loan to all of the partners. Fine, that's true. That's true. But they are using it to buy the property. And this person, so it really depends what the deal is. If the deal is that if this manager pays the bank, then they have no liability to him. It's his loss. Then in a chami. But very often they indemnify him. That if he goes ahead and signs personally and he has a loss, the partners will reimburse him for that loss. In that case, he's acting as an Arev Kablan, and you run into the same problem. Now, another common case, and this is especially common, is very often the bank will not be willing to lend to the LLC. So one partner will take out a private loan. He'll use his credit card, he'll use his line of credit, borrow money from the bank, and then invest it in the business. Now essentially what's happening over here, the partner is borrowing money from his credit card. He's borrowing money against his personal line of credit. He's then going ahead, taking that money, and investing it in the business. Zuk the Taz, if the partners are liable for that money, this is ribus d'oraisa. Because the partner, the manager, borrowed money, ribus, that was fine, he's paying a guy. But when he invested in the business, and the partners are responsible to pay him back, that, he says, is a new halva, it's a second transaction, and that will be ribus d'oraisa. Mm-hmm. So as long if the other partners are not liable, No, so that's fine, because then the same way this money went to buy this building, which is owned, let's say, 50-50, the payments are also coming 50-50. So each person is only paying for their share. You have a question of arvus. The arvus is only the guarantee, but the guarantee is only a problem if he pays it out and then wants to go after the other partners. That'll never happen if they're not personally liable. Or he'll just sell the building, which means that he's using their money to pay off the debt. So as long as the payments all come proportionally from the partners, the IRS is never triggered. Wait, slam. The case was it was given to the LLC, but he guaranteed it personally. There, the loan is to the LLC, to all the partners. He is a guarantor. So there we have to deal with Arvus. And Arvus is only a problem if it gets triggered. But to the extent that all the payments are coming from the building, and there's a default, you just sell the building, it means all the partners paid their share equally. It only becomes a problem when the manager pays and then wants to be reimbursed by the other partners. So in this case, where a manager borrows money privately and invests it in the business, this, the Taz and Kufay and Sifka and Gimel starts off by saying it's ribbis d'oraisa. The Taz then says a heter, and it's a different pshatim in what the Taz's case is. The Taz says that although if I borrow money from a guy and I lend it to you and you pay the interest, he says that clearly would be ribbis. But if a managing partner takes money, and the money is the loan is paid out of the proceeds of the partnership, there the Taz says that it's mutter. Now there are three pshatim in the Yechroyim how to understand the Taz. The Chavis Das says that what's going on over here? If the partners are responsible for this loan, there's nothing to talk about. It's always going to be ribbis. So the Chavis Das, you know what the Taz is talking about? The Taz is talking about a case where the manager went ahead, he didn't have permission. He didn't tell anybody. He went ahead, he borrowed $10 million for the partnership. So in that case, when the partners find out what happened, they can tell him, you had no right to do this. If there's any loss, don't come to us. This is completely your headache, your loss. Now, if the deal works out and there are profits, the halacha is that before you share the profits with the partners, you can subtract all of your costs. But the partners have absolutely no liability. While the Taz allows you to pay for the interest from the profits that you made, if there were no profits, this managing partner has to eat it all. That's how the Taz learns. The Divrei Chayim, Chayish Mishpat, Simen Chav Tes, and the Kol Yo, Simen Chav, take the heter a step further. They say like this: Eino Chanami, if the managing partner takes this money, if the business goes bust, the partners are not going to have to reimburse him. If they do have to reimburse him, if that's the understanding, it's ribbis. But if the managing partner borrows the money, and the understanding is that the partners do not have to personally reimburse him, there's no problem with a partnership repaying the loan. You can use profits that were generated. You can even use the principal that's sitting there in the partnership. Because we look at this loan, at this interest, as a business expense. So where there are profits, losses, doesn't make a difference. The business, this partnership, is responsible to pay off the debt. However, Divrei Chaim says, if the deal is that all the partners have to indemnify this borrower, this managing member, then Divrei Chaim says, even according to the Taz, it would be awesome. Not really. But again, Divrei Chaim is a very limited case, and it's specifically over here where he's just calling it a business expense. A normal non-recourse loan would be a problem. When we have partners and you borrow money, so we look at that just like you can incur many other expenses for the business. This is another legitimate business expense that we'll calculate when we divide the profits or losses. But a regular non-recourse loan, according to Divrei Chaim, is mashma would be also. So this is the Divrei Chaim, this is the middle shita. There is a Marsham that is makel all the way. We're not going to go into the details why, but the Marsham says in all cases it would be mutter. Now the halacha, typically when these things happen, the understanding is that the partners will indemnify the managing member, and therefore, certainly according to the Chavis Das, but even according to Divrei Chaim, it's certainly a wise for the parties to write a heteriska, otherwise you will run into problems. However, after the fact, if they did the deal and they forgot to write a heteriska, if there were profits generated, then they can certainly pay out the interest from the profits, and you don't have a ribbis problem with that. But mikana lahaba, or certainly before you go into it, whenever you're dealing with a situation where one partner, where a managing member is borrowing money, there you have to be very careful, and you do have to write a heteriska. Now, one other important limitation to this taz is that this applies only when the managing member borrows the money. If a silent partner, if an investor, is putting money into the business, and he had to borrow money to these funds, and he wants to pass along his interest expense, there the taz says this heter will not apply, and it will certainly be aser. So this heter is limited to only when it's a managing member, and even then it's kedai to write a heterisko so as not to get involved in these various different shitas and different machlokesim. It depends. It probably depends on exactly which pran the taz that you're going to follow. But essentially, if you're a managing member that you're incurring all the different expenses, so your interest expense is just another business expense that's getting thrown into the pot. On the other hand, if you're not involved with managing the business, you're just not an investor, and we can't look at the where you got your money as a business expense. You're not the person who's accruing expenses for the business, and therefore the taz says this heter will not apply. Now, one last halacha before we end, and that is, when a person borrows money, very often the lender will have different expenses associated with the loan. There are legal fees. He'll go to an ATM to get the money. He'll break a CD. They'll have, the collection expenses. So the question is, is a lender allowed to pass along his expenses to the borrower? So over here we have an interesting chiluk. On one hand, it's clear in the Gemara that when a person borrows money and there's a shtar, there's a contract that's written, who pays for the shtar? The leva, the borrower. So you see clearly that a shtar, since it's even that the borrower has to pay for the expenses for the loan. Now the place can extend this to any direct expense to secure the loan. What's the point of a shtar? Point of a shtar is to make sure the lender gets his money back. So if you're going to, let's say, record a mortgage, you're going to do something to have collateral, all of those expenses that are there simply to secure the loan, to make sure you get paid back, they're also the place where makel, and that's something which the borrower would have to pay. Now, Zimaram Sheikh that extends this, what happens if you have a gemach? And to run the gemach, it's a whole big formal gemach, they have an office, they have a secretary, and expenses. So based on a Maram Shik in Yerdeisim and Kufnun Ches, the place can say, al pi halacha, you have the right to pass along those expenses to the borrower. Even though it's not as direct, it's not like the shtar, but since this office is set up only to lend people money, so you have the right to take the expenses, divide it among the borrowers, and that's also fine, that it's not ribbis, no one's making any money off it, the borrower is simply paying for the direct expenses that are incurred. Where it gets a bit questionable is where the lender says, I have to spend time arranging the loan. So there already, where he wants to get paid for his time, that's something which is typically a problem. There's a maram that when you lend someone money, if you force him to hire you to do work for him, that is a problem of ribbis, and that should be avoided. But if you have other expense, out-of-pocket expenses where you're paying other people, you're paying overhead, there, according to most places, you would have the right to pass it along. So some place can say it has to be divided per person because you're not having more expenses based on the amount of money. And when you divide it prorated based on the amount of money, that implies that it's something to do with Hamtanas Mois. Other places can say there's no difference. You can divide it however you choose. The person who benefits more, it makes sense for him to pay more. Now what you can't do is you cannot pass along the expense of your money. Now, if a person borrows money from a guy, he borrows money from the bank, or uses his credit card to get the money, if he re-lends it, then he certainly does not have the right to pass along that interest expense. That is really the cases that we discussed earlier. Since what you borrowed from a guy, that's between you and the guy, you're paying interest, that's your problem, when you're turning around and charging interest to the other person, that would certainly be usur, and that would be ribbis d'oraisa. Because the cost of money is, the way to say that in Hebrew, is ribis. So outside costs of, you know, getting the money or fees and things like that are okay. But once you're dealing with the cost of money, that would be a problem. Okay, we're going to stop here for now. Next week in Mitzvah Shem will be the last shiur before Pesach. Anyone who made it this far, I know the past few shiurim have been a little bit more technical, a little bit more involved, but I'm happy to inform everyone the worst is over. And next week will be more of a summary and halacha l'maisa. And then in Mitzvah Shem after Pesach, we'll go back to some other Choshen Mishpat and Yonim.